And I see designers as problem solvers, and they need to be confronted with these problems since the beginning.
Welcome to Truth Behind Travel Podcast. My name is Dolores Semeraro, and this is my weekly show dedicated to hospitality and tourism professionals who want to restart the tourism and the travel industry with traveler-centric tools and insights in jumpstarting their travel recovery journey starting today. Subscribe to the show to be the first to know when the next episode, full of tips, tools, and strategies on travel recovery, goes out. Truth Behind Travel Podcast, Season 2, Episode 46. Welcome. I hardly ever mention the episode number when I open the show. But we are at the beginning of 2022, after all, and numbers seem to be the thing to mention. So here we go. Episode 46. Welcome back. Oh, welcome if you're here for the first time. On the podcast, we speak about all hospitality, tourism, and travel strategies, insights, and tools to support industry operators, entrepreneurs, professionals, and all that goes in between. So if you're working in the industry, this podcast will help you navigate the stormy days we're living and restart the tourism industry. Imagine the scene. You're working in a hotel and there is this piece of art or design in the middle of the lobby and nobody really knows what it means or how to clean it. Yes, in today's podcast episode, we are going to talk about the gap between hospitality operations and hospitality design. How does one help the other exactly? If you are a hotelier or a hotel manager or a hotel owner planning a renovation, or if you are in the middle of one, stay with me on today's episode because my guest is going to share with you what does the perfect designer brief need to include so that you can prepare the right information ahead of your designer meeting, save big dollars in the design scope, and reach your most desired ultimate look. Also, what are the most common hospitality designers' misconceptions, from the heaviest one to the lightest one, and how to turn designers into problem solvers? My guest today is the Chief Operating Officer of the international design firm Campbell House, a global team with 25 designers and team members scattered across the US, Europe, and Asia. I'm very excited for today's episode because I personally did 3 openings and renovations hotel projects. So there will be a lot of juicy stories going down during the conversation today. Help me welcome Monica Moser.
Okay. Welcome back to the show and welcome, Monica. Thank you so much for joining me on Truth Behind Travel today. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine, Dolores. Great to be here.
Great to have you. When we start touching bases of what I was really excited to talk about, the topics that we are going to explore together today, and that is design and architecture, particularly in the hospitality sphere. And before we start and we dive deep into all the questions that I have, so many questions for you, I wanted to have a bit of an overview of your super interesting background, multilingual, multinational, and where you are right now.
Well, thank you. You know, when you are in a situation, you don't really think that you're special, but people keep telling me that speaking a lot of language is important, so I believe them. I come from actually a German household. My family comes from Munich, but I was born and raised in South America, specifically in Venezuela, where I was born. And my father comes from the hospitality industry as well. So I have been immersed in this environment since I was very little. And I came to study and to do my apprenticeship in hospitality industry. So I worked in operations in Germany. And then I moved to France, where I'm currently based. I live in Paris. It's about 22, 23 years in hotel operations before I changed to interior design.
And how did that change happen?
I was in a situation where my next position would have been a manager of a hotel. And I didn't see myself in this position because I think it changed a lot since at least my father was working in hospitality industry, because it was much more operational that time than it is now. And I was offered at that time a position to open the office in France for the interior design firm Wilson Associates. So the change happened quite smoothly, interesting enough. It was an amazing experience. It is still an amazing experience because it is using the experience I have gained in hospitality to help designers make better hotels, and I learn a lot from them. I think the position, the combination of people from operations and people from design in an interior design firm is really very, very helpful. And you wonder why it hasn't been done more before, because a lot of interior designers are put in management positions where they are less and less involved in the interior design, the passion they had at the beginning. So it is basically letting them do what they do best, interior design, and taking care all of the rest, the support system around them. Right? I would discuss about budgets with the clients. I would discuss about contractual issues with the clients. I will take care of the people management and making sure that the designers have the team around them, which should be taken off their shoulders. You know, they should really concentrate on what they do best. So the combination in an internal aspect is very interesting, but as well external, if you say with our clients, with the people we are doing the projects for, because we will design, at least we try to design projects that are operationally valuable, you know, that they, the end user, the client actually feels good in it. It's not just pretty to look at, but it's actually functional. And I think this is often overlooked in projects because the focus is on very high-end designers, putting a name out there, doing an amazing brand, but it's not always helpful for the people in operations, or let's say not always on a long-term functional, which is a shame.
It's true. And in many cases, that's quite the barrier between the functionality of design and that marriage, so to speak, with the brand identity of the hotel in this case, because we tend to have that quest for beauty, and we want to make things avant-garde and on trend and with the colors and the material. And we forget that these are spaces that are not just there to be pretty, but they're there to be used by people that are 99% of the time on holidays. So it's a completely different usage, so to speak, of the livability. I don't know if that's the word.
No, it's true. And there are different aspects that we usually forget when we do a project in general. And I don't put the blame on anybody here, but we forget that it is for a client, you know, somebody who is actually then sleeping in those rooms. A lot of times the projects are ego projects and we don't have the end user in mind. On the other hand as well, we don't think much about the staff that is working in the hotel. Is it good for them? Are they through the design capable of doing an exceptional service? We can do a lot with good design. And important aspect as well when creating a project is you know, the let the designers do their job. A lot of times we are not confronted with operational issues in the hotel because the client says, we heard that a lot, he says we don't want to constrain the designer in his creativity. Which, you know, I mean, he is not a good designer if we are restricting him with giving him a lot of problems. So we need to have the global idea in mind when creating a project and be open on every single aspect of the hotel.
It's true. And this is about the brief, right, that we're going to speak about it later on today, when who creates the brief and how does the perfect brief look like, right, in this case. So we're going to be talking about that in a moment. But before we go to that, you said you're just based out of Paris, and you've made that switch and then joined sort of like the hospitality design side. And in a way where, let's say in the last about 2 years or so, where the work from home became work from anywhere in the world, you know, we're all like kind of nomads and digital and remote working, you've joined a full-on remote team that is basically spread around the world with headquarters now in Paris and in the US as well. I want to know about the team and what's the vision, what's like to be part of that, of this culture. And how does it feel to work with a team that, you know, you don't go to the office every day and meet them?
It's interesting times now. In the midst of COVID in 2020 now, we thought about building up an own company with Beth Campbell, the CEO of Campbell House. And we thought about what would be the most interesting company for us to work for. What are we expecting from this company, and what don't we like in our current roles? We created a very interesting concept and a very interesting company. She has an amazing vision of what she wants from Campbell House. And then in 2021, we founded the company and brought in some amazing designers and great team members. But the aspect of having an office or a location was not that important. First of all, we knew that we could work from home already. It was a given. We had to. And then it was obviously for a startup, like we were in a financial aspect as well. We cannot open offices all around the world in the first year. So we started building up a remote team. And since we knew each other, most of us knew each other already before, the transition was very easy. Now, we built up our company on the aspect of, first of all, our people are very important. So the whole experience of Campbell House will be around its people, the talents we have. So putting a team in place for a project is not based on its location, but merely on who is in the project, what are their backgrounds, their capabilities, their design experiences that will fit the project the best. We want to deliver the best service to our clients and support our clients the best possible way. And we can only do that if the team is the perfect fit. So we don't mind having, let's say we have a project in the south of France. Obviously, the language is very important. So we will include our team in Paris. But it happens that for this specific project, somebody who is in New York has the experience, or in Las Vegas has worked already for that brand before. So we will just put them together and try to have them work in their fields for this project. And sometimes it is an advantage because we do have different time zones. So we have constantly somebody working on that project. If you see a lot of projects, they are communicated or marketed in a way to put to highlight the designer on the project. We don't resonate like that. It's not my design. It is a project. There is a team behind, and we work for the sake of that project, for the benefit of the project and the end result. It is not about the ego of one designer. It is a team behind it. And that's why saying that we put people first is not only, and of course, of our team, but as well on the whole project, the design we do, the projects we do, and the partners we work with.
And I think this is a very interesting way of shaping what it means to put people to be putting people first. Because one might think, okay, I put people first, so what they do stands out and they gain the recognitions that they deserve. But also, you know, as you explain it now, it's really the design carries the name of the team. It doesn't carry necessarily the highlight of that specific designer that had that idea. Because what happens is that especially in hospitality, you might find hospitality, you know, or hotel owners or managers that are very, they need that, they need their star act, you know, they need the name on their design because it makes it to the headlines, it gives press coverage, it gives a lot of, you know, social media interactions and so on. But in your case, it's the project that speaks. So regardless if it's one person working on it or another, the project per se carries on the legacy of the quality of the work that the agency produces in a way.
Yeah, it's absolutely that. And, you know, I respect people wanting to use signature designers. It's only natural and it can be important for a project. I don't say the contrary. I worked with amazing star designers in the past. So they're great people. But it depends on the project. It's very short term to communicate about a signature designer. And I challenge hoteliers that are like 3-4 years open to ask their receptionist if they still remember who designed it and why and what was the story behind it. You know, it's something that it works for marketing at the beginning. I don't think it is a very long lasting idea. And I came upon projects where there was an amazing amount of storytelling already. So you had the place, the location, the building, historical building behind it that already spoke, you know, you didn't even have to renovate. You had already an idea of the 1950s, you know, or something very interesting. And then you have the hotel brand. Then you have sometimes the owner, who is a big name. You know, why would you add another name to it when you have already this amazing story to tell? And that's where we like to put ourselves a little bit back and enhance the design, enhance the story, create something that is more long-lasting in order to, you know, be more respectful to the project itself. And as you mentioned, there is a lot of blend in disciplines. There is we work on corporate workplaces, we work on retail, we do senior living in Europe is getting more and more important, which is amazing. We have entertainment projects and casinos in Las Vegas. We obviously hospitality, but the interesting thing about it is they blend now. Everything is related to the service industry, and it all goes back to the experience of hoteliers, but as well as designers in hospitality industry, because we know the client, we know what the client expects, we know service and the challenges towards it. So this is something that we really like, is not to have separation in the projects, but these blends that occur nowadays.
It's about these hospitality design being helpful to hospitality operations. So the hospitality design concept, the concept person needs to bring solution. It doesn't have to create challenges to the operations in that sense. And here I see that in many cases, that's the case out of personal experience, where a lot of the team couldn't quite figure out why is this thing here? What does it mean? What do we know? How do we clean it, for example? Or are we allowed to touch it or not? So I think there's a lot to learn from the hospitality operations side and also hospitality design. So if you think of this gap, like, you know, how does that gap look like today? You know, we've just came out and the last 2 years, I'd say, welcome to 2022, where everybody's talking about the future of travel or the future of hospitality. I was curious, you know, I'm intrigued, like, how does that gap look like to you?
Between design and operations, there has always been a gap because when people don't really talk to each other and share their problems. You know, I opened as a hotelier, I participated to 3 hotel openings in various fields. I was with different brands each time and then in different positions as well. And every time we had these discussions upon opening, why did this designer do that? And why was this room made this way? And why didn't they put whatever it is, we always blame to the designer. And now that I'm on the designer side, I realize that they are not to blame because they're never confronted to these issues. You know, they are never really confronted to problems at the beginning of the project. Again, we don't want to constrain the designer and his creativity. And I see designers as problem solvers, and they need to be confronted with these problems since the beginning. One problem being as well, for example, a budget, which is not per se a project, a problem, because we can design towards a budget, whether it is a small or a big budget. You know, the budgets that are endless don't exist anymore. So there's always a constraint. But you need to tell the designer beforehand, because everybody wants the best hotel in the world. We design that, but you don't want to cut afterwards, after you have designed, because you have budget problems. So you need to tell the designer beforehand. And the ideal scenario is if you have all the parties involved from the very beginning. They might come in or out on the project, but they need to be there at the beginning when they receive the brief of the operator or the owner. So this happens very rarely. And terms of what the changes now have made in the COVID times, I think there was a movement already beforehand and a lot of changes in hotels, like, for example, the opening up spaces and doing more flexible environments, which is great. And it accelerated maybe through COVID as well, the aspect of sustainability and all that. But we haven't really adapted operational aspects to that movement, to that change. It is, I think the hospitality industry needs to catch up a little bit on the design industry, or the, I don't like to use the word trends, because for me, trends is very short term. Often a trend, let's say for the color, is used by the color industry. You know, we have the color of the year because we want to sell it. So, but you're right, it is a movement. It's habits of clients. It's the way they behave differently, maybe after a situation like COVID as well. Crises do change the habits and patterns and travel. And we have to adapt to it in any aspect, whether it is in designing hotels, in operating hotels. We need to adapt on what the consumer wants. And I personally believe that hospitality industry has been very slow in that.
So you're saying that the hospitality design has adapted faster than hospitality operations to what consumer behaviors and consumer preferences the end consumer finally is. So how can one side help the other? Because I do see these words and this, obviously this, everybody likes to jump on big words this day, especially on social media and on different platforms, the hybrid spaces in the hospitality industry. And we had this chat before, you and I, where we had a laugh thinking about a reception is a reception. It's where people check in. But now a reception is a coffee shop, and the receptionist needs to learn how to make coffee, but they don't. And or maybe they don't do it just as well, or vice versa. So that's where you said the service industry doesn't catch up. But my question is, are we pushing it? Like, is it really what's needed, you know, in the hospital industry today?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think that we lacked a lot of training on operations when we create a project, when we create a nice new concept that is, let's use the hybrid world. You have something that is as a coffee shop, a check-in desk, a lounge area, a working space, and all of the above all together. Then service needs to change. Service needs to understand the concept behind it. And not always the staff, the operational staff, is included in the whole discussion about the concept. When we create a concept, there is a lot of storytelling behind. And we need to explain that to the staff because they need to translate that every day on operations. Let's say if you do create this very flexible space, yet the team behind is still reasoning in, I'm from reception and I'm from F&B and I have to call my colleague because I don't know. Or the worst thing is, no, you can't have a coffee because we are not open yet, you know. And I'm saying this all from examples that I personally had. You go on to all these very fun, creative new concepts and then you are confronted with a situation that you can't have a coffee because we open in 10 minutes only, you know. So this needs to change. We need to continue telling the story that the designers are creating for a lot of money, and but we need to help them. I mean, where do they find this inspiration? We need to help them by including them in the whole process, in the whole design process. And that, again, it happens very, very rarely.
If I would put in a room designers and hotel operational people, who would you want to have? What's the best moment to train who when it comes to matching that gap?
I think from the very beginning, and I'm a very keen believer on putting everybody on the same table and asking questions. You know, at the end of the day, the owner or the person who pays for the project will decide, but at least he heard every aspect. And sometimes you can get a lot of information because you need to understand that the operation, the people that are working in the hotel, and I'm not talking about the designer of the hotel operator that is somewhere sitting in headquarters in an office. No, I'm talking about the receptionist, about the waiter, about the hostess. They know their client. They know specifically for hotel renovations what problems they had with the clients in the past and what they need to change. So include them. I mean, you want to do the best hotel. You want to do the hotel where you don't have ideally guest complaints. So ask them, ask the people who are actually interacting every day with the client. And we did one project in Paris where the person, our main contact for the whole process of designing, was the general manager. And it was an amazingly fluid project because there was a real exchange with what problems they have and how we can resolve them. I don't say that's always in any scenario the best solution, but I think it's the smartest way to resolve all problems from the very beginning.
Absolutely. So it's a matter of bringing the expertise of everybody and the inputs of everybody in that brief. And if you look at, for example, the brief, the designer brief that you've received in the past, as opposed to what you're receiving nowadays, what's the main difference that you are seeing in this very, very important document?
We have seen changes in requests for sustainable projects. And, you know, I started in interior design in 2015 and in the 5 years after that, I've never received one project where sustainability was a key element of the brief, which is a shame. So I think it has become more and more important. So we do include that in our design more and more, which is good. So I would say that changed. So I see that now there is a bigger request on the briefs for locally produced furniture products in general, which might be hopefully an interest in sustainable products. But I think it is mainly a result of the issues we had on the supply chains, is the furnitures or products coming from Far East take more time and more money nowadays, and we don't know actually if they will come at the end. So we have received a lot of briefs where the key element was to source locally for the hotel. You know, you have to take small steps. You can't do a perfect sustainable zero carbon hotel from scratch. I think we need to take baby steps, and it's already good. It's already a great impact. At least at Campbell House, we try to do projects, so we are committed to projects with healthy designs. You know, we want to consider all the impact on the environment we have. We have a holistic view on health and wellness for clients and employees. So we try to implement that in our designs, even if it's not in the brief. We try to. Now, wherever possible, and you mentioned that in some countries it isn't, we try to resource locally. If it isn't, then we have had projects that where we recycle. You know, in a renovation project, there are a lot of elements in the hotel that you can reuse. We can upcycle. We go to local markets and find, products or furniture that we can use. That is very nice. We were in a situation as well where in a local market in Asia, we found handcrafts for something completely different that we reused for bedboards. Or, you know, we try to use whatever handcraft there is available. And maybe we need to teach people, but we try to do it in a different way for the sake of the project.
In relation to the brief that we've been talking so far, with parties involved, people, the human element, the environmental element, and sustainability element. So let's say if there is an hotelier listening to the podcast today that is running, perhaps is a hotel owner manager combination, mm-hmm. so to speak, and they are considering renovating or redesigning their property, but they don't know where to start. So the brief is a good point, is a good place to start. What should that brief include for them to get started? You know, like, let's give them the top five things that a brief must include if a hotelier would like to renovate their property today.
Well, excellent question, because they are never fully 100% informative. These briefs are often created for a variety of hotels, not for a specific hotel. But I would say what is very important for us to know what the client, whether it's an operator or the owner or the hotelier, what they like and what they dislike. What they dislike is often more telling than what they like. We would like to see in a brief all the operational details. And, you know, it goes as far as to know the average rate or your targeted average rate of the rooms, or what is the clientele. Why do they never include the marketing brief in these first offers? I need to know who is your client. I need to know who you want to bring in as a client. How long are they staying? You know, which companies, which countries are they coming from? It's very interesting information for us to design for them, for these clients. The end user for us is really important. Sometimes you come across projects where it's an ego project and it is for one person who wants to make a statement. That is fine. I mean, this person is paying for it. But in this case, we need to know a lot of details on what he wants, where he likes to travel, what his expectations are. And we need to understand why he is trying to make that statement. So these are informations that are very tricky to receive and often part of a more personalized conversation. But it's good to know them from the very start. And as I said before, the budget. I don't know why it is so complicated to receive some monetary value at the very beginning of a project.
Well, it should be there, in fact, because yes, that dictates the way you articulate the choice of materials, the distribution, the sourcing, the execution, and also the caliber of designers that you want to bring in, because maybe you want to collaborate with an external consultant to add on and add value to the design concept. So operational brief, budget, personal expectations. So if it's a hotel owner, manager's combination, or if the property is being renovated and redesigned or designed brand new out of a chain, like a brand umbrella or a standalone concept, a solo boutique mm-hmm. hotel, for example, a standalone property. So all these things should go in the brief.
Yes, including the marketing brief, and please some aspects of sustainability that you are looking for.
That are related, for example, to, I just want to really, you know, spill it out super clear for those that are listening, because sustainability now, it's such an overused word. And a lot of people are like, what does it mean? Do I have to remove the plastic straw from my bar counter? Yes, I do that. But what does that actually mean? So, for example, for a hotelier that is approaching a restyling or a design concept, sustainability comes under many different aspects, right? Many different sort of shades of the same color, really. That comes with commitment in mind, that we are committed not just towards the planet, but also towards the people. And what we do it for the local people or for the people in general and for the environment. So when you say sustainability, what does that apply to?
Yeah, you're right. It's used and misused. Again, I would always take baby steps. What I don't like to see, and there was a movement a couple of years ago, is this the use of sustainability for purely marketing tool purposes. So it is talking about my company is entirely straw-free, as you mentioned, and we use spaghetti for drinks. But at the same time, having plastic bottles in your room, you know, you need to be consistent. You need to have a language throughout the hotel and don't use one thing to talk about your hotel. I think that's it's not fair to the whole movement. But let's use baby steps in helping operations to make a more sustainable impact, with helping them in design already and creating and renovating a hotel that makes sense for them afterwards in operating the hotel. And as you say, it is, the obvious thing would be using local products, the sustainable materials, eco-friendly products. We have amazing suppliers for that. That's absolutely no issue. But it goes beyond that. It is maybe how to create something that is integrated in the community of the place where the hotel is. How can we make an impact to the staff in their community? Do we need to? There is a hotel group that creates destinations and experiences that help the community in the area, wherever it is. Like, for example, in giving the opportunity for clients not only to stay in the hotel but to build a school at the same time, or try to reforest the area, which is nice. I mean, you give the client as well the possibility to participate to that, to have an experience around environment. And another aspect will be well-being. I think it's more and more important, and we don't only concentrate on the client, but as well on the employee. We need to make an environment that is taking care of their minds, of their bodies, being healthy for them, and create a whole package around it. And design can do a lot in terms of, you know, bringing nature inside the hotel, which is more soothing for the body, bringing in spaces that they can relax as well. Yeah, there are a lot of aspects as well in terms of lighting, in terms of the air, the use of air, the products that are healthy enough for the body. So, I mean, there is a lot to do, and not necessarily things that you need to communicate a lot about.
And how did that translate, for example, with the one of the very latest projects that you just completed, the Hackathon in Bodrum, a location that is iconic for Turkey, with a concept that is completely different from what the locale, you know, kind of gets surrounded of. So you had to merge the beauty of the surrounding to a very foreign sort of concept and identity. How did that come about? How did that come along for you?
Well, yeah, this is a process that a designer might explain to you better than me, but Hackathon is a very, very strong brand, and they have a good concept already put in place, and the brief is very good. So it gives it's an easy task for designers. Let's say it was very highlighted. Easy is not that easy, because you have to go through the design process, but at least they make it easy for the designer to understand what is wanted with that brand. And putting in this case a completely different culture of the brand into Turkey, we want to integrate some local elements, and designers can do that through patterns or colors or some specific elements that everybody would know from Turkey or from this world that would completely relate to the environment where they are, and blend that with the concept that exists already. And that's what designers do, that's what they learn. That's why they are capable.
That's true. How many people do you have right now at the team? Obviously scattered all around the world, but quite a rich background, as I can see from the website. But yeah, tell me.
Well, yes, so Campbell House celebrates this month its first anniversary, which is amazing. The time flies.
Happy birthday.
We are around 20 people, 20, 25, and now we obviously work with freelancers when we need it. It's a company that starts off needs to be very careful, obviously, on the finances, which is not a secret for anybody. But we do have a pool of people around it that is very strong, that we know, that we have worked with before, who like working in this team. So we have an amazing and very flexible group of people together. We try to collaborate as much as possible with the whole team around a project. We try to create experiences that make a lasting impact. That's what we are excited for. And I think we have built up a team that is making this possible.
For me, tourism, travel, hospitality, it's the bloodline of what propels us forward. And whoever contributes to this, bloodline, I don't know if bloodline is the right word, I'm getting emotional here, but it really serves a higher purpose. And I think in terms of designers and hospitality design, I wanted to have this conversation today on the podcast because it's something that needs to be evaluated. We need to reinvent and we need to refresh the way we approach restyling our hotels and premises, or design them from scratch, if anything. So I'm very glad we had this conversation today. Thank you for being a guest on the podcast. I absolutely loved every minute, and I probably will have one of the longest episodes because I won't edit out anything. Is there anything you would like to add?
No, I love what you said, Dolores, and thank you very much for having me. But I wanted to emphasize that this travel industry is a beautiful industry in every aspect. It connects people, and it is something that will help us understand other cultures, other people better. And being confined all these months and years and being restricted to not traveling, I think we all need that. We all need to understand each other better through traveling, to understanding all other cultures on the side. And whatever we as designers can do to create that little experience, that meaningful experience for travelers, makes us already better in this world. So I it's an industry that I love. Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast, and all the best. Look forward to seeing more projects from your team.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today on Trip Behind Travel Podcast. Did you enjoy today's episode? I hope so. Every conversation is meant to bring you tips, values, strategies to help you get started with your travel recovery journey. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave me a review on Apple Podcast. If you are on Apple Podcast, of course. And if you are not, connect with me on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn and let me know what your thoughts are. I'll leave you all the links to connect with me on the show notes, and I look forward to helping you all along the way with each single podcast episode. So don't forget to subscribe and share the show on your social media channels.